Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Innovative Teaching Podcast. I am your host, Jeanette Schaefer. Today, we are continuing our conversation with Steve Crawford on online interactivity. So another app that I've seen, which gets me thinking about how can we take this and do something in the classroom, is the House Party app. So that's been a popular app coming out. And the idea is that you have a whole family or a group of friends that are live streaming, and you see the live stream video of everyone that's participating. But it's the same thing. They're starting to host dance parties. So one person's a DJ, and then you've got the other people that are actually there dancing and participating. But it's like you're together even though you're not together. So that's, and I look at, how can we do that with our students, especially during this time where they're feeling disconnected? Is it possible to have a little dance party or house party or...
And this is where I look at some of our students themselves and going, this is the chance for you to kind of take your club, take your student organization and stay together. I used a different app years ago. We used to do basically it was a virtual playlist that you could submit songs to, and someone would curate, and that way we'd have our playlist for all of us working in different locations, but we all get the same music at the same time. But we didn't get that dance party aspect that you're talking about with the House Party app. And I think that's an awesome way to go through things. And I think I could see different things happening. But most of it, I was like, that's one that if the students don't know about that, they need to be told so that they have a chance to keep interacting and interact with their friends in a class, outside of class, wherever their friends happen to be, so that they can, because mental health is just as important as everything else.
Yes, definitely. Well, and then I know Pokemon Go, I don't know if it's in place yet. I was just updating my app before our session, but you could physically get together and be in a location and do a raid with your friends. But they realized that with people staying in their homes, that they can't get out and get to different locations now. So they're supposedly updating the app so that you can do a raid from your own home. But once again, I start bringing this back to learning. It's like, how do we tie that in to where it makes it way, way easier for students to tackle a challenge of some sort using a mobile app and learning together all at the same time and not having to, you know, work on a physical project together in class? Like, what would that look like?
Well, you know, and we've got some tools in that direction that we've been using for years, just maybe not as effectively and as widely as we probably should have. We rely too much on exams. And so if we actually had our students do something and use their mobile devices to document what they did as they did it, take pictures of the steps and reflect and do a number of different things, we could actually have richer assessments than we would have if they just took a test. And that's one, I think that's an opportunity here is, yes, the test can be self-grading, but you know, if you write these projects and design them well enough, you can cover multiple learning objectives. So it becomes that the student does this over the next couple of weeks. And when they're finished the project, they finish the course because they've covered all the competencies of the course.
Yeah, I even was talking to a couple people about that because I realized the virus is happening really fast and that, you know, we're thinking that we have the whole entire semester or we might be able to extend it, you know, for those that don't get finished. But that was kind of my thought. It's like, how can you create one or two projects that cover all the competencies? Now, maybe it won't be as in-depth as what you would normally do in face-to-face instruction with, you know, the full 16-week course. But how can you still provide like a positive experience where they still gain the knowledge that they need? And yeah, you're not trying to do all these live lectures. You're not trying to do all these different separate assessments. You know, how do you pull it together and help them get it done quickly?
Yeah. And again, I think this is where some of this interaction really comes into play, because if we move to a model where I don't have to tell you everything you need to know, I give you a framework to play in And then, and going back to what I was talking about earlier, that whole AMA, the Ask Me Anything model, you can then go, okay, you've done this part of the project. You've gotten stuck. Ask me questions. You know, my job is to help you think through it and help all the students think through it, as opposed to, here, let me do a brain dump and tell you what you need to do. I mean, I love lectures. I think lectures is, well, the research shows lectures is the most efficient way to transmit information, but you can overdo it. And we do overdo it. And so by doing these mini lectures, going, okay, everyone has a question on blank. Let me tell you about blank for 5 to 10 minutes. And then that way you go to the next question. What's the next question? And I think this puts the faculty member in a very interesting position as the expert. You know, you're not just the person who stands at the front of the room. You truly are the expert who knows everything about this topic, and you get a different level of respect. I think a better one personally.
Right. That's why so we've went from some faculty thinking they were going to do a live stream lecture for 100 minutes, which I'm thinking, you know, maybe I'm not a very good student anymore, but I'm like, oh man, there's no way I could sit on live stream for 100 minutes.
I don't know about my brain, but I know my chair couldn't handle it.
That too, yes. And then being in front of a computer, I'm easily going to start like, you know, what's happening on Facebook? What's, you know? So, but they went from that to, okay, I'm going to record my PowerPoint with the voiceover, have the students watch that before. So when we actually come together for our 30 minutes, it's going to be more like you said, ask me questions. Where are you at? What are the, you know, what are the challenges? What don't you understand? So I'm really, really happy to see that our faculty, you know, as they think through the process, it's like, I think this would be a better option. It's like, no, you're right. You're right on target.
And if you're going to do that, the key to making it work is if the students haven't done the pre-work before they come on into the session, don't bail them out by doing the pre-work during the session for them. That's been one of the biggest things with the flipped classroom is that the A student comes into class prepared. The B student comes into class prepared most of the time. And the C student comes prepared, you know, a good chunk of the time. But the key thing is they have to come in prepared. And if you bail them out, then what you've taught them is you don't need to take the time to do the stuff ahead of time because you're going to get it repeated to you later. And so just don't bail them out. Give them the pre-work, tell them to do it, and then answer the questions, the specific questions they have that may not have been covered as well as it could have been.
Right. So one last example I wanted to share. My niece, she is going to Seton Hall to play basketball. And since they've been not able to go to campus, okay? So they were supposed to go to campus as soon as school lets out. They're not able to go to campus now. Well, they still have to start their workouts to start getting in shape for basketball. So this ties into exercise also for anything. Well, they have a workout, so they sent the whole workout, and she needs to do the workout. That's fine. You know, you can do a workout on your own. But part of it is she has to actually videotape herself doing the exercise every so many, I don't know if it's every so many days or every so many workouts. But I think there's two things. One, they want to know they're doing the workout, right? Mm-hmm. The other one is they're able then to look at the video and actually look for techniques. You know, what are they doing correctly? What do they need to improve upon? So it's another way to do virtual coaching or, you know, provide guidance with the video. I know we're seeing some stuff in the district. Stephen, maybe you know more, but some of our yoga instructors went to video. I don't know exactly what they're doing because I haven't seen it.
I don't know much about that one, but I do know what the MBA used to do.
Okay, what's the MBA do?
I had a guy who used to work for me, and he would actually go to some of the teams and they would shoot video of them going through and doing all their different free throws and different shots from different parts of the court. And they would build these film libraries, and they'd get coached, obviously. And then what would happen is every morning he'd wake up and he'd have to compile all the game film and pull out all the segments of just that one player doing that one shot and getting it compiled, so the coach could then go through and analyze it. So this video analysis technique's been around for a while. In fact, there's an iPad app called the Coach's Eye. And when I was getting coached on my running technique last year, my coach, she actually filmed me. And what's nice about this, she could go through frame by frame, find the spot she wanted, and draw on it and show where I was misaligned, and then later show me how I was doing it correctly. So there's been a number of apps for this. Coach's Eye is one of the popular ones from TechSmith. And so, yeah, but yeah, these types of things. And when you look at Strava, so for an example, I'm a runner. I do not own a treadmill. So if I'm going to do, but my watch will count my steps, and I can tell, and it can tell how fast I'm going and how far I've gone. So when I'm on a treadmill, it can tell the world that I did a certain run. Now it can't tell, but so much unless I videotape it. And then if I'm on my bike, because I have all the power meters and everything on it, it can actually tell you what kind of bike ride I did on my indoor trainer, because it has all the meters where, so how hard did I push the pedals and how fast did I spin the wheel and all those types of things. And so you're seeing more and more people. I think a lot of young people are already filming themselves anyway, in the gym, because a lot of times their coach was not in the gym with them. And now you're seeing the coaches doing it for the masses. I mean, my personal trainer, I'm kind of falling behind on the strength training side. At the running side, I'm doing good on at the moment, but the strength training is where I can screw the form up. So she wants me to do the same thing as well, as I start doing things at home, record that, and then send it to her for analysis.
And the good news behind all this is that if you're sitting at home and not exercising, there's lots and lots of opportunities right now to find free exercise classes that you can participate in from your home. I've seen a lot come across. I'm like you. I get outside. I do a lot of walking, and then I've got free weights, so I do some lifting. So I don't really look for those opportunities, but I might, because I'm probably going to get tired of walking the same loop and lifting weights that I'm here in about a week or two. I might be on the internet too, trying to find some of those exercise classes.
Yeah. And I'm glad my gym has given me resources as well as my coach. I just need to sit down and plan out a routine and get that going.
Yes. I know. It's like everyone's life was kind of turned upside down or shifted. And it's like trying to find that new norm, you know, what's the new normal and what's that schedule look like?
Yeah, and all the trails I run on are now crowded with people, so I keep trying to find new trails where no one's at. And I've been successful, but I hear they're going to shut those down even here shortly.
I know, that's a bummer. That's a bummer.
I just keep running where no one's at.
All right, well, Stephen, do you have any lasting parting words or advice for our listeners?
I would say the biggest thing to do is to remember we're all in this together. You didn't sign up to teach remote courses, more than likely. Your students didn't sign up to take remote courses as well. And so I think as long as we communicate and we are just as compassionate as we can be with each other, that's the best way forward. It's better to over-communicate than under-communicate in this time of uncertainty. And so I would say just talk to people, talk to your department chairs, talk to your fellow faculty in your department, share ideas with each other. And definitely talk to your students on a regular basis and talk to your CTLs.
Yeah, and I think just the simple thing of, hey, what movie are you watching? Or what's a good recipe you guys have tried recently? And what book are you reading? So those are real quick, simple things to put the human aspect into the work that we're doing and have the students feel like they're connected to everyone else in the class. Well, that is it for today's Innovative Teaching Podcast. I hope that you're able to take something away. I know some of the ideas are bigger and would take some time to implement, but then we try to give you a couple little simple ideas that you could implement right away. So go out, have a great day, and we will see you on our next Innovative Teaching Podcast. Thank you.